This is RevTech Podcast, where we discuss everything from business processes to measurement and technical alignment. The RevTech mission focuses on effectively managing and optimizing the go-to-market strategy through methodologies, tools, and best practices. We discuss the success criteria and technical fit guides for decision-making and ensure solutions align with the business goals. Okay, in this episode, our guest is Daniel Gray, the CEO of Learner AI. I'm really happy to have you on. I don't think we had anything yet regarding the sales enablement, how to do the sales better. So I'm looking forward to this episode. Welcome on the pod.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, great to be here.
I love when you start recording and the landscapers turn up. So that's always fun. Hopefully you guys can't hear it too much. But yeah, Daniel, super happy to have you here. Let's just jump right in and give us the elevator pitch to what Learner is and does.
Yeah, perfect. Well, Learner is a real-time customer intelligence hub. So what we're doing is we're redefining how go-to-market teams actually understand and engage with their customers. So the way we do this is by capturing and analyzing all customer interactions, which provides multi-layered actionable insights that align team, drive data-driven decisions, and enable personalized customer engagement. In a nutshell, Learner helps unlock the potential of your customer data and then enables businesses to truly resonate with their audience.
That sounds very exciting. I'm very excited to see the demo in a few minutes. And so Learner, I think, just fully went live about 9 months ago. I'd love to hear a little bit about how it got started, where you were before, and where the idea came from.
Yeah. Well, the reason we decided to build Learner was really through living through the experience myself. I've worked in B2B sales my entire career. And whether it was an early stage startup or a later stage corporation I've worked in, there was a common theme, which was go-to-market teams were consistently misaligned on their customer needs and really led to ineffective engagement strategies and ultimately cost time and money for these businesses. So when you look at the root cause, the vast amount of customer data was just not being captured effectively. And it was not centralized. It wasn't visible to the organization. And in fact, there was a recent article by Forbes which found that more than 80% of customer data is not captured or used at all in decision-making, which when you think about it is pretty crazy, right? Because we're in a world where generic outreach and spray and pray tactics just no longer work. And even now with AI automation, yes, you can reach, you know, your perceived ICP more effectively, or more efficiently, let's say. But if you don't know what truly motivates your buyers and you continue to use generic personalization, all you're doing is burning through your TAM. So we saw this as a critical gap that needed to be addressed. And together with my co-founder, Tunde, we launched Learner in May last year.
So I feel like anytime, you know, I'm hopping in, I oversee a sales team, I'm hopping into a prospect call or something, like I have to go talk to them to learn everything about the customer or the prospect and figure out what's going on. And so having a centralized place makes a lot of sense. And so you started 9 months ago. I'd love to learn a little bit about where you are in terms of like your finance and capital journey and if you've taken on money or if you're bootstrapping and how that's going.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're pre-seed funded. We raised our pre-seed round with Antler in August last year. So we actually joined their accelerator. So we started Learner as a side project initially in May. We launched it. We then applied to the accelerator where we were successful in getting in. And then we were able to raise the capital from Antler in August. We're now in the process of raising an angel round. This is going to enable us to reach certain milestones in the coming months as we gear up to a seed round in Q1 2025.
And where are you with the angel round investing that the most? Is it more engineers and more sales and go to market? What does the next couple of months look like for you guys?
Well, in terms of how we're planning to use the investment.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's two key areas for us, right? So one is product. So we plan to enhance our AI and machine learning capabilities where we can provide deeper, more nuanced insights from customer interactions. And two is sales and marketing. We've found traction. We're making some good progress. Naturally, we'd like to add resources to enhance our go-to-market efforts, which will enable us to capitalize on the opportunity in front of us.
That sounds great. I want to dig into more of like that product roadmap in a little bit, but I'd love to see the product. Do we want to jump into the demo?
What is the use case you want to share with us?
There's a few use cases, but I think the kind of main use case that I'm going to touch on is how buyer insights can actually uncover signals around the pains in these specific personas and buyer segments. So the key here is to understand the language of your buyers and bring that to the surface, right? So this is helping sales to target the right personas with the right language and for marketing to inspire content creation and campaigns to the right audience. So let me share my screen and I'll run you through this use case. We connect to and aggregate all of these customer interactions and then enable you to create bespoke reports around certain buying groups. For example, could be certain firmographic data around a profile of customer that you want to target or look at, for example, certain industry, certain size of company in a certain geo, but also on a persona layer, understanding, for example, what the nuances are between a CRO versus a VP of RevOps, right? What is it they care about and what's top of mind? So you really understand their language and what they care about in real time. Now, we can also generate reports. So Lerno becomes smart. It understands the requirements from each persona, whether you're marketing or sales, for example, and then it can suggest feedback through notifications. So it's fed to each persona, again, in real time, highlighting certain components that have been raised from conversations or engagements. So I'll go into an example reports that we've put together. So these are from recent conversations I've had with certain prospects. So essentially, machine learning here is analyzing these conversations, whether it's email or calls, support tickets, and then pulling out keywords and themes that have been coming up frequently within these engagements. So you have the ability to hone in on a particular topic or cluster and understand the more specific information around why that's been mentioned in what context. And then you can filter this, for example, whether it's by frequency, looking at the most frequent terms that are coming up, or sentiment. So for example, you may want to understand, you know, negative sentiment and what's coming up within that topic. We can go a layer deeper where we can look at trends around business goals, for example. So if I'm looking at this cohort of customers, what are commonalities around certain business goals? We see growth is the most common term that's been mentioned, and then we can get more detail. And in the same way, we can do this with pain points. So for example, visibility has come up the most amount of times within this group of customers. And then we can look at the specific detail to get more anecdotal evidence as to where this has been mentioned and why, which is also important. So for example, we can see here this particular customer has been mentioning this lack of visibility in the sales process 9 times. So we know it's top of mind, it's a real pain point, and then we can see the context. So for example, this is from a particular transcript or conversation, it will pull up that detail, and then you can start to see the information related to that, whether it's an email, support ticket, whatever it may be that's referenced here. So yeah, that's the kind of core use case I wanted to highlight today. There's obviously different use cases within Lerno. I'm conscious of the time we have for today's session. So I wanted to make sure that we highlighted the USP for us, which is bringing the voice of the customer to the forefront of decision-making and getting everyone aligned to the needs of customers in real time. So yeah, hopefully that all makes sense. Happy to answer any questions that you have here.
Yeah, sure. So I think this is super helpful, especially when you're demonstrating how at the aggregate level you can see the different pain points and the goals. I mean, these are the typical two components when you try to define who your persona is and what are the objectives. So everyone is having a boss. Everyone is having targets. Everyone is working towards something. You just don't know what are underlying issues. If you look across the different industries, right, that this person will face, or that role will actually face. I don't know, in the fintech industry, that might be different working in the marketing than, you know, in the martech, right? So definitely having this in place, it's helping to shape and define the person's objectives and also what they really care about. That's a basic information that any marketer will need in order to the personas, right? And then obviously there's a second part that is coming with the matching of what the features of the application will do or solution will do. So I think it's a fundamental piece of information that people need to use in order to be effective with that approach. So I love it. So how often you, when you talk to the teams, they find it useful is my question.
Yeah, extremely. So I think you touched on something, you know, really important there, right? Is getting that true understanding of what your customers are saying. So if you look at a few ways in which go-to-market teams analyze customer data today, there's a lot of data, but a lot of it's quantitative. So we understand close rates based on industry, you know, conversion through pipeline stages, number of touch points that indicate whether we can win or lose a deal. That's great, useful. But what it misses and what it lacks is the qualitative piece. Why is that happening, right? It's the why. And that's what we are uncovering and what we've realized there's a gap for. And the benefits we've seen, because again, a primary persona for us is a CRO, because a modern day CRO, for example, who is typically a buyer, is essentially responsible for aligning the go-to-market team, right? Sales, marketing, operations. And, you know, it's very difficult, particularly in a scaling business, if you've got a large team, multiple products, multiple geos, industries that you target, is very difficult to truly understand what's happening, like, you know, into that level, but beyond the quantitative piece. So the main benefits we've seen that our customers have highlighted are improved alignment and visibility across the team. So there's no more guesswork. There's no more operating in silos. You know, everyone is aligned. The ability to make data-driven decisions, right? No longer relying on guesswork or intuition, and increased efficiency, particularly around sales and marketing engagement. It's now helping businesses understand so that they can do more with less, right? I know we've gone through this period, and I think businesses are starting to understand it's not actually as effective as they thought, where, yes, like I mentioned earlier, you've got automation so you can reach a wide audience really quickly in a day. But if the message you're inputting or the way you engage with them is not relevant to that persona or that buyer, all you're doing is you're burning opportunity. So this is about helping sales and marketing understand the language of their customers, right? So that they can really make sure they're targeting the right segments, the right people, but also with the right message.
Yeah. As I was watching the demo, I was like, this is a product marketer's dream, right? Because they're getting feedback from the sales team, oh, we don't have the right product. Then they're getting feedback from the product team, they're not selling it the right way. And it's like, well, what is the truth? And how can we enable the sales team? And how can we get the right product feedback? And this actually lets them not go and spend all their time on research, but actually informing the product team and informing enablement or the sales team on how to position things a lot better. They don't often have a ton of budget. So I understand like going through the CRO and that's your first point of reference. But I'm curious if you're seeing product marketing teams really latch onto it.
Yeah, I'm glad you actually mentioned it. Because within marketing, product marketing absolutely is like a core function that we've seen real appetite for this, right? Naturally, for us, they're not necessarily the decision maker or buyer of this solution, but they are absolutely advocates for using this tool. Because if you look at how businesses are solving for this at the moment, whether you are a product marketer, whether you are someone from the product team, whether you're in, you know, general marketing, you know, to understand what's happening, you have to go and listen back to calls individually. Let's say an average demo or conversation with a customer is 40 minutes to 60 minutes at time. And that's one call with one person at one company. So how can you get that at scale? It's not scalable, right? And that's the reason there's a big disconnect. The other approach is, right, you get in a room with salespeople once a week. There's always that. I've been through this myself. There's always that resistance. I'm busy speaking to customers, haven't got the time. And even when I get in a room with marketing, I'm giving my perspective, my bias, right? We've all got cognitive bias, right? I'm giving my perspective. What does my pipeline care about? Not the greater view on our customer base. So there's inefficiencies, but people are trying to solve for it. But like I said, nothing's actually automating this at scale and enabling businesses to get that true alignment. And that's where I think Learno really fits in.
Yeah, we just did an updated ICP, right? And we had to spend months collecting feedback, listening to gong calls, doing customer surveys. And it's like the customers have already given you the information. Like, you know, it's there. It's just how do you aggregate it? It seems like you have to be integrated or connect a lot of tools to have Learno start to process everything. I'm kind of curious about like, what does that onboarding process look like with Learno and how quickly does it start spinning things out and whatnot?
Yeah, so this is a really good point. There's two ways we're addressing this. At the moment, as of today, the way we've built this in is that we can plug into your existing tech stack. So whether it's a communication tool, if you are using a GOM or you're just using your Zoom call, VoIP system, whether you've got Gmail, the Zendesk, your CRM, Learno has the ability to plug in and start ingesting what we call first-party data. So data is already captured. In addition to that, we're capturing zero-party data. So that's what's being told to your your sales or CS reps in real time, right? That's as valuable. Like, how can we then combine that with your first party? And then we also have the ability to connect to business intelligence tools. So there's third-party data, you know, account information, stakeholder information, we can pull that in as well. And then have that kind of combined view to help with our analysis. So yeah, in terms of integrations, we've designed it to be able to be
flexible.
Yeah, it has to be flexible. And that's something we're going to continue to work on. We can't, you know, today we have the ability, because we're agile, to customize it for customers. We have pre-step integration built in, but we do have the ability to expand it. And that's something we're doing part of our focus moving forward. And so it's extremely easy to plug and play. And the second thing that we are considering, but it's more of a later, later play, because you have this cold start problem. We do have the ability, if you've got existing recordings or tools, we can ingest that. And we've got that data. So you've already get insights off the bat. But the other play is that we can start to look at potentially anonymizing all of this data across industries, across personas, so that we can then look at serving that as a package for particular companies or personas that have that cold start problem. If I'm a new business entering fintech and I want to understand, you know, trends around payment systems or open banking within Europe, great. You know, we've got some preset data that could be anonymized and used, right? At this point in time, it's not something we do, just to be very clear. And obviously, we've got to ensure that it meets all of the privacy and data protection regulations, everything else. But that's a potential play in which we can support that cold start.
Yeah, and even potentially like benchmarking that, right? Against like companies that don't have the cold start problem, but to say like, what else is happening in the industry and what can we incorporate that maybe we're missing? That's very interesting.
Do you plan to leverage any data from the intent side, like other systems that are providing that information?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. You know, we are considering that as part of our next phase, where we're looking at partners, one of which will be intent data providers. You know, what I find with intent is obviously it is very useful, but it's reliant on sort of third-party intent. So we know someone's visited your website, they've downloaded a piece of content, right? That's helpful. Again, what it lacks really is the why, and why are they looking at that, right? What I would say is actually, you look at these intent players, it's a really good complement to what we do. Because then what we can then come in and see is like, are there themes now that we're capturing in real time where it's showing the why behind they would look at a report like that or download a piece of content or, you know, what they're trying to implement within their business. And it's that type of information that I think can give a far more comprehensive view and confidence to how sales and marketing engage with their personas.
I think selling process became, unless you have a very transactional product, but even then, probably I would argue that nothing is easy. And the selling process, it became more and more complex because you don't use any more one single channel to sell. Arguably that this is just getting multiplied. I would say every single year we see that there's an evolution of that because nobody wants to buy by picking up the phone from SDRs. Yeah, sure, I'm interested, right? So marketers and the sellers become creative and they're finding new ways to sell. Even that podcast could become a selling point, right? You can use that. And I think marketers started to lean towards these other ways, right? They become more genuine. They become more merit-oriented. They become like more showcase-based. I mean, all of that actually could become a weapon in the selling process. Why I'm saying that is because there's no single data point that will tell you, oh yeah, you're going to do more of this. You're selling more. No, that time is already gone. Like, forget about this, right? You have to have a multi-source predictive modeling that is guidance, right? At best. Then you need to make a call, you know, whether you're going to call that persona, this persona, based on your experience, right? So it's even your experience is somewhere in the mix of all these sources, right? So that's why I'm asking this question, because the more sources you have, I think the more options you give to your customers, depending on what they sell and where they sell, to augment this and massage over time. Well, that's actually my next question. You know, how often you see that these goals and the pain points are changing on the account? Do you think that there's a dynamic of changing this every quarter, or it's every year, or there's a certain amount of data that needs to be in order to make a switch? What is your take on this?
My take is, firstly, it's sort of subjective, right? There's no predefined time frame for when pains and challenges differ. What I would say, though, is that to assume that what your customers cared about last year, 6 months ago, or even last week is the same today would be naive, right? So I think the key here, particularly with, as you mentioned, right, we're in a world where competition's fiercer than ever. There's a lot of players entering all different areas, and buyer expectations have changed. So if you're engaging them with the same expectations and outdated processes and intelligence, then most of the time you're going to lose out and you're not on top of it. Particularly if you want to be a thought leader in the space, particularly if you want to be, you know, a leading brand within your category, you need to be on top of these trends. You need a finger on the pulse. And I think that's why it's particularly important. So yeah, I think to answer your point there, firstly, it's extremely important to be on top of these changes, but you can't assume any sort of specific time frame to when those changes occur, because all you know, a certain regulation in a certain industry massively impacts how that persona operates or how that business operates. So it's something that you need to be on top of.
Yeah, it's like it depends and it's constantly changing. Unless you're paying attention to it, you'll miss it. You know, like I think that's the thing, is like you don't want to miss the change. I'm curious, with the product, with Learno, when your customers are implementing, what are you asking them to like pay attention to measure success? Kind of like, is it increased close won deals? Is it going back to metrics? There's obviously a lot of some intangible things to measure, of like, we delivered an ICP quicker, we enabled training quicker, but what are the like hard metrics that the CRO is going to care about that you ask them to pay attention to?
Yeah. So I think a lot of those things are probably byproducts of, you know, how our Learno is being used or how the insight's been used, right? So something we actually focus on is customer insight utilization rates, right? Then what I mean by that is it measures how effectively teams are leveraging the insights provided by Learno in their day-to-day operations. So for example, high utilization correlates strongly with improved customer satisfaction, increased revenue, and more efficient go-to-market processes. There's always a way to attribute how those insights are performing. So for example, a product marketer or a marketing team may release a certain piece of content or change copy on their website based on the language they're ingesting from Learno. And then they may see an uptick, for example, in the amount of inbound requests or something along those lines. So, you know, there's different ways to measure it. And you could argue that a lot of that increased activity will then lead to hopefully higher conversions and
more opportunities, and whatever it may be. Yeah, that kind of depends on where the business is at. I'm curious if you ever go down the attribution path, because I think that's a hard component to, or maybe just partner with an attribution tool who's trying to do some of those things.
I have a question regarding this internalization. How did you call this, the full term?
Customer insight utilization rates.
Sorry. So regarding this correlation, is this something you're hearing from the customers, or this is something that you've seen running the analysis?
It's both. So I think we've actually seen, like in the beginning, the way we were trying to measure it was simply looking at speaking to customers and understand what sort of impact it's had, right? Because we didn't have a mechanism necessarily to measure it. We've changed that slightly now, because now we look at the way the insights have been ingested and used, right? So we track that. And then we've had suggestions from different customers that have said, hey, by the way, like we've seen this uptick because we've used this piece of copy based on that information, which is now increased in lead flow this week, right? And it's something that, of course, over time, you start to see how much it attributes to some of the insights being used. So for us, we try and advise customers to actually think of it in that way. So if you plug in today, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to see an increase in your win rate, right? But if you start getting into a habit and a behavior of utilizing the insights fed to you and action it, and that's the key here, right, is to action it, not just have data, right? What's the point? Then you can better understand and measure, you know, how your audience, your buyers, are interacting with your sales team, with your marketing content, with your product. You know, it has a big impact.
Yeah, the way I'm thinking about it is like, you know, we do forecast meetings on a weekly basis and we talk about all the metrics and everything. Then there's also a whole section of that. Half the meeting is we dig into the insights and we have someone who's like going through them and making recommendations on what we need to do next, right? So it almost becomes like you have the quant aspect and the qualitative. And how do you make that qualitative aspect a bigger part of the business and how you operate versus we look at the numbers and we make guesses about why it's happening? You talked a little bit about like how you're working with companies that don't have a lot of data, but then also larger companies. I'm curious kind of what your ICP is and who you're targeting right now.
Yeah. So naturally, as a young company, you learn a lot and you have to learn quickly, right? What kind of works. I think our hypothesis initially when we went to market was to help businesses capture data. So you work with SMBs, early stage startups. But as we started to speak with more customers and win more customers, we've understood that actually the ideal customer segment for us or ICP would be mid-market to enterprise B2B companies, which have complex sales cycles and have multiple customer touch points, right? So in particular, you know, beneficial for SaaS companies, professional services, and even businesses with a strong focus on customer relationships and retention. So for us, that is sort of the evidence we now have in terms of our ICP.
Yeah, they have too much data to some degree, right? Like the startups are, if you have a sales team of one, hopefully if they're good, they kind of understand what's going on and they can give that feedback. But as you scale, it becomes harder to aggregate all of that and have a direction to go in. I'm curious, like Demetrius mentioned up top, that we haven't had anyone that does what you guys do on the podcast yet. Like, who are the competitors? I'm guessing it's somewhat like status quo or differentiated tools that people think already solved this problem. But I'm curious, as you're going to market, like, who do you feel like you're competing with?
Yes. So for us, well, I would say, like, in terms of direct competition, the closest we've seen to Lerner's capabilities is a company called Delta AI. So I don't know if you've heard of them. They were just recently acquired by Pendo, which also is a good indicator for this acquisition. The main difference is that their use case is geared towards product feedback specifically. So it's looking at existing customers and looking at how they interact with a product, and they provide that feedback, which is, again, great use case, but it's primarily driven towards product teams. Whereas where Lerno is different is we use insights to understand the voice of the customer and the persona level, what motivates them, what the challenges are, which can then be fed into the go-to-market strategy, so go-to-market teams. Yes, there's an element of product feedback there, which is absolutely important, but again, that's where we're different. And then in terms of indirect competition is, you kind of touched on it, is sort of looking at status quo, right? Which is, you know, we may have a communication tool that's really good at capturing calls like Gong. We have the team listen back to a select number of videos every week, which then marketing or ops will kind of accumulate in a spreadsheet and then try and share out. But again, this is, you know, we touched on this, isn't really scalable. It's out of date by the time you present it. Nothing about it is real time. So I think there's a, you know, obviously a big gap there in terms of the desired output and the way to try and capture that today. And that's where we've seen this, you know, big uptake and appetite for what we're building.
Yeah, beyond the product side, obviously the go-to-market, and even like the retention and lifetime value of customers, as you mentioned before, on the success side of the business. So it definitely goes beyond just that, but can do that, can do the seem like the product feedback and helping with the roadmap as well. Yeah,
I think I mentioned one thing about the Pendo and acquisition. I think it makes sense for them. They, of course, did providing PLG solution. So I think anything that is strengthening them in that space around the utilization of the product, it's a wise move. And I think they're going to benefit greatly from that. Now, as for other solutions, don't you see that there's a trend that a lot of these incumbents like, you know, Apollo's and others, they try to get into the same space? Now, in my opinion, they're facing the identity problem at some point because, you know, when you build a product around the transactions, at some point there's a question how quickly this is going to become commoditized and you're just out of the pocket, right? Like you just nothing left and you have to go after something that is much more complex. Okay, maybe I should have a CRM, right? Maybe I should have some marketing, to Lizzie's point, attribution solution, right? So these are the much more meaty and difficult pieces to solve, but also they can build the features that are competing with you. How do you see that?
Yeah. So naturally, that's always going to be a question mark, right? You've got these large incumbents that have brand awareness. They have vast amounts of data. They have the money, the technical strength to technically build what you do, right? One thing I would say is the way I compare it, incumbent versus early entrants like ourselves, the advantage we have is firstly, we can be far more agile in terms of innovation and be more specific in terms of use case that we serve for. But also the analogy probably best to use here is like, is similar to baking a cake, right? So incumbents already have their cake baked. So all they can do, for example, with like AI is add a frosting on top, right? To make it look sexy or appealing. Whereas I think early entrants or new starters have the ability to kind of bake AI into their cake mix, right? So we are going to be able to add a lot more value right off the bat. And therefore, I feel for me, like where I see what's going to happen, we're seeing signs of it, is these incumbents, naturally, they have technical debt, they're slow moving. The smartest move for them is to acquire early stage companies like ourselves, you know, bake that into their offering, validate that. So I think that's what's going to happen, because in order for them to survive, they will need to do that. And I think for me, that's how I see what's happening in this space with the incumbents and new entrants. That's how I believe it will pay out. I could be wrong, but you know, I feel that's the kind of signal we're getting and what we're seeing.
I think that's one of the most distinctive elements of what is past, what is future in the product development and the go-to-market. I think that's how are you building? What are you putting as a core versus what you're putting as, like you said, it's a frosting or a layer of fancy
strawberries.
Yeah, I think we touched on this podcast several times, how limited today is AI in personalizing a lot of these tools, right? It sounds like it's giving you something based on the inputs, but I don't think that's the personalization that 80%, and that's a Gartner's hard-coded data, 80% of customers expecting to be personalization, right? Like this is different selling mode. And I don't think the AI today is at that point. Needless to mention, most of the available AI solutions, it's some sort of oligopoly at this point, right? So we're facing, okay, which one you have? And everybody knows all of them, right? Because it's less than five. It's not a kind of proprietary solution that each of these companies developed. Now, the new solutions, new entrants, they have ability to do this, right? You can build the AI, maybe leveraging some of these models, but actually adding layers of more of your proprietary querying database, combination of different sources that can give you that feeling that something is unique and is maybe personalizing this a little bit more. So I agree on that point, on that approach. We don't know that's going to be the end game. We don't know what the new versions of AI will bring us, and you know, as a solution. And of course, there's a lot of new AI models that are getting specialized. So we'll see what it's going to take us. But as of now, I don't think that the future is clear. It's what's the future against the past in that space. So very valid point.
I think what you're doing with AI right now is where it's most impactful, of like the aggregation of data and the insights you can get out of that. There's too much data to sift through, let the AI do it. In terms of product roadmap and where you're heading, are you thinking about having outputs from those insights, right? So like, we recommend you change the copy on your website to X based on the inputs and insights we've provided.
That's actually something we've been looking at. But the next phase that we're focusing on is to enhance our predictive analytic capability. And we want to make it more prescriptive as well. So ultimately, what we're doing is we're developing models that not only provide insights into customer behavior, but it can also forecast future trends and potential outcomes. So essentially, our aim, and for me, I don't think we're in a world where AI needs to replace, you know, human beings or roles. I really don't. I think you need that human input, particularly in sales and marketing, except what I think it can do, though, is it can remove a lot of the barriers to research, and it can provide recommendations that can provide a foundation, let's say, to then build on based on real-time data. And I think that's what we're personally invested in developing. So, you know, for example, that point there where we can say the next phase is, rather than you have to work out with the actual insights, what sort of content to drive, we'd say, here's some recommendation. If you look at your website, here's a recommendation of language that you could use for this particular buying group that you're best suited to, or the sales, right? You should go and target CROs in Europe and in fintech, and they care about this. And these are some pain points you can use to actually resonate with them when you're engaging, right? So it's not, hey, you've just changed roles recently. No, it's like, well, I get what you care about. We can solve for that. Let's have a conversation. So I think that's where we're going to next and what we're evolving towards, so we can be far more prescriptive and predictive in the insight.
Yeah, the thing that AI can't solve for, my dream is to like get on a call, know everything about their LinkedIn profile, know about any past conversations they've had with the company or interactions, and know more about their business in that industry, right? And then when I have that information, which I go and kind of manually pull, the human in me can like weave that into a sales pitch and get them to give the answers that we might need to know, like, what is the best next step? And I think that's what AI can really help deliver is like, hey, you're jumping on this call. Here's all the information that you need to have this call and what you should focus on, which is exciting. Always in the back of my head, I think about like, what are the entry level roles within a company now? Because most people are more and more consultative, right? And like, how do you gain? That's the direction we're going, is like you could take all this complex info and then you have to go and massage it. And so what do those roles become and what are training programs like? But that's a whole side tangent of my thoughts there.
So Daniel, don't you think that this whole sales process is going ultimately is fixing the whole research part? I remember like, when I was like, I don't know, living in the 90s, my friends were telling me, oh, we bought a new TV. Okay, so how do you find a new TV? Oh, you know, I checked this website, and then I have all these like comparison type of analysis, what these new TVs are doing. I think the same happens in B2B today. It's just, of course, way more sophisticated and faster process, but ultimately that's where it's going in terms of educating me as a someone who is thinking about buying, everything about that before somebody calls that company and says, okay, look, I'm interested in your product. Why don't you convince me to buy? And that's where the seller comes in. Think about this as a runway, and then there's a last mile call, right? So I think that we're optimizing from runway in all these tools before somebody comes in with the last mile and says, okay, let me get you over the line. Sign here. Do you agree, or you have a different opinion about that?
I disagree.
It's good that we disagree.
Yeah, like you've definitely got the research piece that plays a big part, because it's not just the last mile element, but I can only relate to my own experience. You know, if I think about back in the day, like you said, about 5-10 years ago when I was selling, we didn't have all the smart tools. It was a bit more of an old school model. It worked, but it was, you know, a lot of the time I would just try and put a square peg in a round hole. What I mean by that is I'm trying to pitch a company that I'm just trying to convince, you know, there's an appetite for my product. So I can still educate them, but it doesn't mean they're going to buy. And I think today we need to be a lot smarter, because it's about now understanding, right? Who is the persona or industry or segment of customer that actually has a relevance to our product? Because, you know, one thing that was always really helpful for me when I was selling back in the day was qualifying out as much as qualifying in, right? I want no's, right? Because I don't waste time and energy on a customer that's not going to convert or doesn't see value, especially if I'm thinking big picture, because it's not just about new business. It's also about retention and growth, which I think is top of mind for every business at the moment. So for me, there's using AI and intelligence to educate the sales team and marketing team on who is the subset of customers that are actually the best fit for what you're trying to sell, that you can still educate, or are in a position where you just need to kind of take them over the line and get them to that point of buying. So I think that's the part that can add a real advantage nowadays, rather than, like I said, back in my time, which was very much like, you know, the spray and pray model without all of the fancy insights, right? So I think that's where we're going to see a lot of efficiencies. And I think that's why I believe as well, I think most business leaders, especially by 2030, have an appetite to kind of embed AI into their operating workflow, right? Into how they conduct sales and marketing activities, how they operate as a unit. So yeah, for me, that's, you know, my take on it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think also there is benefits to that more higher in the funnel educational sales approach or business development approach, especially in a larger, more technical offering, because that's how you learn. Like if you're not having those conversations, you're not learning. The other thing I would say is often potential customers don't know there's a product to fix the problem that they have. So like, I think that when we talk about fighting the status quo, people are just going to keep doing what they're doing because they don't know that there's a product out there that might be able to help them. And are they ready to buy it right now? No. Can we use, you know, AI and automation to get them up to date? Yes. But I also think it's kind of important to get to know a human earlier on in the process, because I think that adds a lot of value. You know, it's like, how do we have a sales team that focus more upper funnel that's not SDR, but educational and consultative? And then how do we have that go down where you have a closer? Those are different personalities too. Often, you know, so really good salespeople can do that all. But does it become something that's a little more educational and product oriented or product feedback oriented and down to the closer and negotiator?
So here's my inspiration. Yesterday, do you know that this show on Apple TV, Sunny?
Yeah.
No.
He's British. We can't count that opinion.
If you've got good recommendations, I'm all in. Hey,
you got it. You got it. Call me if you don't know what to watch next. Anyways, this is a show that is about the robot that is developed by one of the Japanese engineers. The guy disappears. That doesn't matter. What really matters is that relationship with the robot, right? And it's like an assistant that is just following you, and it has this like a human nature that is embedded in the box, essentially, right? Me and my wife are watching this, and I ask my wife, would you like to have that? And don't go too far assessing my relationship with my wife based on that, okay? Don't you even dare. So she says, yes, I would love to have that, right? And I'm like, actually, that would be fun. And well, I quickly realized with that, it's like you can ask this robot almost anything. You can ask, hey, what is the best flower to give to your girlfriend? What is the best gift that, you know, will fit your daughter, right? You know what I mean?
What's the best new Italian restaurant in town? Like anything. Yeah. It's Google, but in a robot. Yeah.
In one way, it makes you lazy. But on the other hand, it's making you very efficient. You don't have to spend a lot of time asking these questions. And by the way, just because this robot is living with you, it knows a lot about you. Right. So the research about you, to your point, Lizzie, about the person and the human, it's done. Nobody will know more about you than this robot. It's scary. I get it. The Odyssey movie, it's making all of us think about this twice. But it's solving that problem. And it's a last mile conversation in the end. So that was my inspiration for the question. That's why I was laughing, because I'm going to bring it in. And please don't think that my wife feels lonely. That's not a point.
I would take a robot in a heartbeat. It would be so nice to ask all these questions. Yeah, because it's just like, you know, even to keep my to-do list in check, that would be nice to have a robot for it.
Yeah, it sounds very cool.
One more question before we get into the kudos. I'm curious, do you use Learno for your own go-to-market? Are you actively using it in-house?
Yeah, of course. Bear in mind, we found a lead at the moment in terms of our, you know, sales and marketing engagement, right? And very limited resource. So how can we make the right decisions, the right bets? Where do we focus time and attention? And it's starting to pay off really well for us. So yeah, we absolutely love it. I mean, it's been a massive game changer for me personally, especially as well, because we don't have the luxury of having the budgets to go and invest in all the fancy tools that exist. So we've got our own, thankfully. So that helps.
You got to play smart.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I want you to put all your integrations on your website. I want to talk to you about that after. I was looking at your website and I was like, they must have a million partnerships. Like what? Where are they? So if you ever want to talk partner-led growth, I'm always down to do that. But, you know, one thing at a time.
We should do that. And also, by the way, just FYI, we're launching our new website soon.
Oh,
so
nice.
We're going to have messaging. Everything's going to be far more in line with what we've actually learned and what we are. And we're starting to come into adolescence, let's say, in terms of learning about ourselves. So, you know, it's all part of that evolution.
Oh, I'm excited to see that. Yeah, you're kind of in that, you know, even with funding, like that design phase and figuring things out. And now it's like, okay, we like know where we're at. Let's redo the website, redo go to market. That's super exciting. I can't wait to see it. Any other companies in the space or partners that you want to give a shout out to that you think are doing cool things?
Yeah, well, I think in the general theme of AI, like, what's really interesting, there's so many great use cases for AI outside of sales and marketing. So sometimes good to kind of get a, you know, outside my tunnel vision of the world we're in. But there's two things that come to mind, actually, is pretty cool. There's a YC company called Off1. I don't know if you've heard of them, but I really like what they're doing. It's quite interesting because they're using AI to automate order taking at fast food restaurants, right? And I think that's an industry that has lacked innovation for many, many years. And it's a solution that fits really well for a use case of AI and how it will help reduce operating costs. And then the other one, which I think is really cool, because I think it's a very important topic in the world of AI, you know, whether you're in sales or marketing tech or fast food tech, whatever it is a company called CleanLab. As we know, AI is still in its infancy. It can still hallucinate, can still make mistakes. There's this whole data privacy piece. So you mentioned about these robots learning everything about you. Like, where's the data go? Is it protected? Right? These are top of mind. So what they do is they just help find unreliable data and then flag any kind of misinformation from chatbots, from LLMs that may be incorrect. And I think, you know, that's absolutely needed because AI is not going anywhere, in my opinion. It's only going to get stronger and more advanced. It's going to become integrated into our way of living, our way of working. But naturally, if anything new, you know, there's always concerns or skepticism and people are afraid of change. And I think having something that can help with those security measures and make AI better for its purpose or its output, then I think that's a really positive thing. So those are, two companies for me that are, you know, really intriguing at the moment. I think are doing cool
things. Hold on. I'm going to ask Sunny what she thinks about it. Sunny.
I can't wait for autonomous driving tractor trailers. That is the thing that I am most excited about in the world of automation and AI, because I see so many accidents and I'm like, make it happen quicker. There's all kinds of cool things. I'm glad you took it out of our sales and marketing lens.
So you know what the Lizzie's bumper stickers are. I'm full for automation. Remove the truck drivers from the road. That's what it is.
So last but not least, what are your top three tips that you want to give us today?
I think the tips that I'll give is sort of in line with the space we support, which is, you know, leveraging customer intelligence. The key things to kind of be aware of or focus on is firstly, just ensure that all customer touch points are connected and feeding to a central hub. Whether you're using a Learno or automation for this, there is still ways in order to collate that data and centralize it. And that way you can get a 360 view on your customer journey. Two, you know, make customer insights accessible to all relevant team members. I think it's important, not just analysts, for example, in bigger companies or ops that, you know, of course, are maybe doing this type of research, but this can ensure that it empowers everyone to make data-driven decisions in their roles and read off the same hymn sheet, right, ultimately. And the third thing is don't just collect data. I hear all the time, we're great at capturing data. Great. Okay. What do you do with that? Use it to drive actions, whether it's personalizing customer interactions or adjusting your marketing campaign. It's all about tiny application, in my opinion, when it comes to customer intelligence. So for me, those are my two cents around, leveraging customer intel.
Yeah, those are great. Well, Daniel, it's so good to have you on the podcast. I'm glad that Sunny got introduced during this episode and maybe he'll be back. And it was really great learning about Learno. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Thank it's great to be on the show.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the RepTech Podcast. Please subscribe on the listening platform of your choice and leave us a review to let us know how we're doing.